Welcome to the Body Grievers Club. Hi, my friends. I'm Bree.
And I'm Jana.
And we want to sit in the grief and the suck of your body image with you.
But we also want to show you that even in the suck, you can still live a great life in the body that you have right now.
And that no matter how big and how difficult your body grief feels,
you are not alone.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Body Groovers Club. I am so excited to bring you my friend, my colleague, and my recent graduate of my Body Image Excavators program, Bonnie. Bonnie, hi, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bree. Thank you so much for having me here today. I am so excited to be on your podcast.
Bonnie, how long have we been working together?
It's been a while. I think that I joined your first boot camp. Oh my gosh, like January of 2021.
I think that's correct.
So yeah, almost 2 years we've been working together.
Wow. And tell the people what you do. I mean, everybody knows what you do, but tell us what you do.
Sure. So I'm a registered dietitian and a certified intuitive eating counselor. So I really mostly help my clients heal their relationship with food, but obviously body image things come up as we're doing that. So that's where my work with Bree has been super helpful because, you know, we're really not taught all of these body image things in school to become dietitians. All we're taught is to just help people lose weight, let's be honest. So I didn't have the training that I needed to support my clients with the body image piece that inevitably comes up when we're talking about food.
Yeah. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but your page started as a weight loss page. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes. I hate to say that, but it is true.
I mean, this is the only reason I started a new Instagram was because I also had a diet shrine.
Yeah. I mean, like if someone really wanted to scroll my page and go back to years ago, you would see food swaps and low carb wrecks and all of these things that make me cringe these days. But yeah, that's what I used to do.
Well, and I think this kind of ties into a little bit of what we wanted to talk about, because one of the things we shared a common experience with is like that our beliefs can change over time. And so like, I imagine when you were doing your low carb wreck, right, you never imagined you would eventually become a diet culture rebel. Like, I don't think that ever probably crossed your mind. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I never in a million years would have thought that I would do what I'm doing today. And a big reason for that is because I knew part of it would be like sharing my own struggles that I had faced. And that was a huge fear for me. So I had told myself, like, I will never share this with anyone beyond my immediate family and my husband. And then it just started to eat away at me when I learned about the harms of dieting and diet culture and ultimately decided to make that change. So yeah, I never thought it would happen, but I'm so, so happy and so grateful that I changed.
Yeah. And I feel like there's such shame in, especially when you're like in diet culture and you're promoting diet culture and then you're struggling in diet culture all the same.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you even begin to maneuver through that? How do you even begin to be like, oh, like this is normal and this is like, this is supposed to happen. Like, you know, like, or it's okay to struggle, especially if we're leaders in this field. There's just so much pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think having community is so important. I feel like that's kind of what it comes down to with almost everything, is like having people who you can talk to about it and people who can help you through it. And when I made that pivot, it was really scary. But to be honest, a lot of people were like really supportive. A lot of dietitians and stuff were like super supportive of me switching. And my audience seemed pretty supportive. I mean, I had 16,000 followers at the time. So yeah. I'm sure it would be different if like I had, you know, a larger number and like totally pivoted then. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
I feel like that's often with grief, with change, the worst part is the moment right before, right? Mm-hmm. Is the anticipation of this is going to suck. And it's going to suck. And we are super resourceful to handle even the most complex situations. And I'm thinking even about like when I was on your podcast. Oh my gosh, that probably was 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. I can't even listen to it, not because of you. It's because I've grown so much in my podcast and hearing myself talk and the audio. I know I could be kinder to myself, but I'm like, wow, I can't believe I aired that kind of audio and the questions I was asking. Like, you know, and you continue to learn as a practitioner. I'm sure 2 years down the line from today, I'll be like, why did I say that on that podcast?
Yeah. I read somewhere that like, if you don't cringe at your work, it means that you haven't grown. Like if you can't look back at your own work and be like, that was some bad advice. Or that you would have given the same advice now that you would have 3 years ago, that it means there isn't growth. And I remember when I did your podcast, I was still really struggling. I talked about this on Marissa's podcast as well, Behind the Binge, I think is Marissa's podcast, right? Where my faith has really changed in the last, I mean, really it's the last 10 years, but like really at the forefront in the last 3 or 4 years. And it was not something I ever thought I would ever talk about publicly. And it was because there was such shame attached to it. And I know when I was on your podcast, I was like, here's my favorite Bible verse. Bah, 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 bah. And I just did a podcast called The Failed Christian Podcast.
Okay.
And again, not something I ever thought I would ever talk about publicly of, that the beliefs that I swore that I was going to believe in the same way till the day that I died, they changed. And it's especially when you are at risk of experiencing criticism from people, it feels even scarier to share. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. And I think, you know, I never thought my beliefs would really change either. But it's interesting that I say that because I think I always had this underlying feeling, like growing up in the church, that I didn't like, there was something that just didn't feel right about it. Right. But I just kind of went with it because, you know, you grow up in an environment and sometimes you're taught to just not ask questions and just kind of go with it. And I would say probably it wasn't until I was really in my 20s and then continuing on into the work that I do now, I think that really had me take some steps back and start to question things a little bit more and ask, like, do I really agree with this? Is there maybe another perspective, like maybe from another Christian leader that I could listen to? And that's the thing, you know, like I still call myself a Christian, but I'm a completely different Christian today than I was 5 years ago because I've allowed myself to step back and ask questions and say, you know, like, is this really true? Is this really how Christians should think and believe? And like, are these people really sinners for doing something that is like, that they literally can't help, you know?
Right, right. I would say like, if somebody asked me like, oh, like, what's your faith? I usually say like, at this point, I know I believe in something bigger than me. I believe that, you know, there's something bigger than me. I call them God. But that seems to be the extent right now of where I can go. I think if I have to, you know, like if someone's like, oh, what's your like what's your faith? Or are you religious? I would say I'm a decolonized Christian.
Yeah.
That's the terminology that I would use. In that like my social justice perspective impacts my faith as well.
100%.
So I would say that's probably the other piece too of like when we did the podcast back in 2021, was it 21 or 20?
I think it was actually 2020.
I think so. That even my work from a body image perspective still lacked the social justice piece.
Yeah. I would say that mine did too. And I think incorporating that has helped me a lot more in all aspects, like as a dietitian, working with body image and my faith, et cetera. So I found a church who their values really align with mine. And I think it's been really helpful for me personally to maintain my faith because it's just what feels right for me, but also have a social justice oriented church, right? And the pastor is a woman. And you never see that anywhere. No. It is a very small church, but I think that has been really cool. And just having people in my inner circle who I can talk to about it. And that's just, I don't know. It's been really nice. And it's made me feel more confident too in the work that I do with my clients. But I don't pull in the religious piece really anymore.
No, it's just about like how I interpret the world. And like, you know, people will say to me like, oh, like I love how compassionate you are. And I definitely feel like that is, for me personally, just a value set of my faith. And it's just different than like, instead of adhering to strong Christian values, I want to live out who I believe Jesus was, right?
Yeah.
And again, like if you had ever told me that like 10 years ago, my beliefs were going to be vastly different when it came to dieting, when it came to faith, I would have said you were off your rocker. I would have been like, absolutely not. Health is absolutely correlated to body size. And you know what's wild is that even still, right, I am body image with Brie, and I can still get caught in those thought traps. And I wanted to bring up a story from when we went on our retreat.
Okay.
And so Bonnie and I went on a retreat as a part of the, you know, the Body Image Excavators program. And my plantar fasciitis started acting up. And it was so hard not to automatically assume that the reason that my foot was bothering me was because I was in a larger body. Like, I was the largest bodied person there. And I started to fall into that trap. And then I forgot what we were doing. And then all of a sudden, Bonnie says something. And Bonnie, what did you say?
I can't remember exactly what I said, but probably something along the lines of, I have it too, and it really sucks. And so many of my clients blame their body sizes for ailments like this, when in actuality, you know, like literally anyone could experience it. Like, I live in a straight size body and I've had plantar fasciitis for probably 2 years. And I can say it is literally the worst thing ever. And I could probably be a little bit better at my stretches and whatnot. But that's another story. Okay.
Well, and I think you had said, oh, mine is bothering me too. And I was
maybe that's what I said.
Right. And I think that was the first moment I was like, duh, like it has nothing to do with your body size. It just has to do with your foot pain. Like, your pain isn't your fault. And what I think we discovered was that the reason that our feet were acting up was because we weren't allowed to wear shoes in the house.
Oh, yeah. We couldn't have our comfy shoes.
We couldn't have our arch-supporting shoes. So we'd found all these, you know, hacks and things that we can do to survive. But reality was there was nothing we were going to do to be able to prevent that. And I think it was such a normalizing experience for me of being like, yeah, plantar fasciitis happens in all size bodies. And I don't know if you know this. So my massage therapist who had come out for the weekend, she told me that oftentimes plantar fasciitis can also be caused because of sciatic pain, which if you're sitting a lot during the day, your feet are not like, and that and like high arches.
Makes sense.
If you have a high arch. And I would say 2 years ago, we both started working a lot harder at our jobs on the computer. And so we're both sitting. And
I hadn't even thought about that.
I know. The body is so connected. Like, I had told her I was experiencing jaw pain. And she was like, it's because of your sciatic. I was like, everything is because of my sciatic. She was like, no, listen to me. She's like, your jaw is connected to your neck. And your neck is connected to your shoulder. And your shoulder is connected to your sciatic. I was like, oh, my God.
But isn't it crazy? Like, back to the foot thing, how, you know, when you were bringing up old stories, like, you are literally body image with Brie. Like, you literally teach people to think flexibly and, you know, not blame their bodies for things. But you still had that story come up for you after doing this work and being a professional in this space for so long.
Literally. And I think that's the part I want to normalize the most, is that, like, there is no point that you get to where you don't have what I call gremlin thoughts. Like, the gremlin thoughts are that pervasive doubt that you're doing something wrong. And I know when it's not about my body, then it's about something else. Mm-hmm. So recently it's been coming up in my business. In, you know, I know you're in a similar phase of business where we're like, trying to hire new people. And I'm like, I don't want to be the one to make the call about this.
Yeah.
So there's just so much responsibility. And what happens if I choose the wrong thing? And it's like, there is no wrong. There is just doing. Mm-hmm. And when it's not about your body, those gremlins come in full force in another way.
They
and
do.
It's two antidotes that I have found to those gremlin thoughts. One is having community, having the ability to be like, hey, these are the gremlin thoughts I'm having right now. And I think I voiced while I was with you that I was like, I am so glad you said that, because this was the story that I knew was going through my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And to your point of having gremlin thoughts just move into other areas of your life, I feel like I've experienced that too. But the blessing in disguise, I think, is that it helps you grow in all of these areas of your life. Like, if we're still stuck listening to those body image and food stories, like, yeah, we don't get to grow in other areas of our life. So while it kind of sucks that it's like, maybe it transfers to work and hiring people or other parts of your life, as long as you have that community and support system, yeah, to help you explore it more and work through it, like, it helps you grow. Like, I know if I never worked on my body image and food stuff, I wouldn't have my business where it is today. Like, I wouldn't have had the capacity to explore it. So even though it's hard, it gives you this opportunity for so much growth in your life.
Totally. And like, I think back to, you know, even before the pandemic, there were things in my life that I was like, oh, like, this is going so well or so swimmingly. Like, before the pandemic, I would have said I had such a balanced relationship with movement, and I never really noticed the plantar fasciitis because I was always up and I was always moving. And then the pandemic hit and my relationship with movement had to change. And in that, like, well, I can't go to the gym anymore. And if I can't go to the gym anymore, what can I do at home? And I wasn't liking the home stuff. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I never actually gave myself permission to not move, because the fear of being immobile was so shameful that if I wasn't moving, what was the story I was telling myself? So I really had to unlearn those movement stories and the shame around not being mobile, and embracing pain, like, that pain isn't my fault, that the pain I experience in my body is not a punishment for existing in a larger body. And one of the biggest narratives I had to detach from was this fear of being unhealthy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so many stories. But we're literally taught to blame ourselves for ailments like this. Like, I have Danny, the physical therapist, I know he's your physical therapist.
Yeah.
He's going to be on my podcast soon. And we talked about this a lot, how we're just taught to blame ourselves, whether it's body size or what we're eating. Like, I have so many clients who are like, oh, I feel this. I have this ailment because I've been eating too much sugar, right? Or like, when I was at the gym, because I enjoy group fitness classes, and people at the gym have noticed that I've had to change what I do to work out. Like, I can't take some classes because of my plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
So a lot of times people ask me about updates, how it's going. And one person once at a time said, maybe I have it because I'm not getting a certain nutrient in and I need to like eat something out. And I was like, no, I haven't brought it upon myself because of food. I know that for sure.
Wow. And like, if you were a different person, you'd have been like, oh my God, you're right.
It's right.
My fault. Right. You wouldn't have known how to be able to.
So then we feed into those stories, just like you know, your story is perpetuated by the world around us, you know, like what we're told by media messages, doctors, healthcare professionals. So it makes sense to have those stories.
Yeah. Even last night, my niece, my goddaughter was over, and we were like playing around, and she was like we were wrestling, and she said something to me. She goes, you're too fat. And a different time, I probably would have been like, that's mean. You shouldn't say that. And I was like, what do you mean I'm too fat? She goes, you're too fat. And I said, too fat from what? She goes, because you eat too much food. And I said,
oh, no.
I know. And I said, oh, yeah? How do you know? She goes, I don't know. I said, exactly. I said, you don't know how much a person eats. I said, and what am I too fat from? I said, are you too skinny or are you just a tiny body? She goes, I'm just a tiny body. I said, and I'm just a big body. And it's beginning to normalize, even at that age, that bodies are different, that bodies are not good or bad, that you're not too much or too little or, you know, not enough or fill in the blank, but that it starts even that early. And so if you were 5 and a half the first time you knew that big bodies are bad, it makes sense that that is a wound or hurdle that you're going to experience today.
That is so young. This is what we've talked about a lot in the training that I've gone through with you, is a lot of this is healing those 5-year-old wounds or wounds that began when we were really young. So we can't expect us to magically heal from this overnight. Like, it takes so much time and so much unlearning, but it's really cool to know that you can get to a place where you're at, you know, Bree, where you can have a 5 and a half-year-old who you love say that to you, and it doesn't, like, it still, I'm sure, really sucks, but it's not derailing you like it had maybe in the past.
And I would say one of the things that we talk about in the Excavators program, and I encourage all of my body image clients and providers to do, is scaling. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how distressful is it? It was a 0% distressful, because I know that my niece loves me. I know that she is saying words that she doesn't mean. And I know that it was an opportunity for growth and an opportunity to teach. I would say, I think I've recently shared, I had a negative experience at the doctor's. That was a little more escalated. That was a little bit more, I would
rightfully
say,
so.
Five or six. And because I allowed myself to explore the gremlin dialogue of what was the worst case scenario, and the worst case scenario happening in real time, gave me the opportunity to not only learn how to advocate for myself in the moment, to share that with other people. And the amount of people who have come back to me and said, because of your life, because of your ability to share about your own, you know, advocation at the doctor's, it allowed me to advocate for myself at the doctor. And that, like, that to me, that is that full picture of, like, meaning and purpose and you know, living that value-aligned life. And it sucks, and it also makes it worth it.
Yeah, I mean, Bree came into one of my groups and shared this story herself. And I can say, you know, after you left, we talked a little bit, but it really did help a lot of my clients, because they've had so much trouble going to the doctors and advocating for themselves. And I think it was just really inspiring for them. And I even have one client in particular who I'm thinking about. She literally had not been to the doctors in 2 years. And, you know, of course, we need to go to the doctors to get checkups and everything, but she was terrified too. So Bree coming into one of our sessions was a really big piece in helping her get to the place where she was like, you know what, this is scary, and I'm still going to go to the doctors and advocate for myself. So it was really hard for her, but she went, and that was, like, it was huge for her. It was so amazing. So it is really cool to see how sharing some stories like yours really inspire others and give them that boost of, I don't know if I want to say confidence, but just that ability to say, okay, this is scary, but I'm going to go to the doctors because I need to, and I'm going to advocate for myself.
Yeah. It's laying that path of, like, somebody else has done this, so I can do this too. And let me tell you, it's not that I do it perfectly, and that, like, what I should have done is said, I'm going to take a break and I'm going to go see another doctor and I'll come back to you. And that's not what I did. Instead, I made a 6-week follow-up, which now I've canceled twice. I know Dr. Dodell is going to be on your podcast as well.
Yes.
So he is now my doctor.
Yay.
And I just, you know, like, the ability to have unbiased medical care is, it shouldn't be a luxury. It shouldn't be a privilege to those who are out of network. Like, I'm very fortunate that I can be able to afford that, and that not everybody else can, which is why I also share my experiences. Because if somebody can listen and benefit from that, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
And I think I'd say too, like, one of the things that we talk about a lot in the program, and one of the things we talk about in general, is, like, I would say there's 3 main hurdles that folks get stuck in. And, you know, one of those is health. And I think it's such a hard hurdle to unlearn when you have literally been taught your entire life, you know, what is healthy, what is not. And, like, I have people who love me, who follow me, and then like I hear them talking, I'm like, how do you, what? You say you follow me and you're still using words like like, oh, I need to be like low carb. I'm like, no.
It's so ingrained in us. We talk about that a lot in group coaching. Fear of health comes up literally all the time. And it's like there's this belief that I see when a lot of people start to improve their relationship with food, but with intuitive eating, that they feel like they're like giving up on their health because they're not pursuing weight loss. So that's something really big that we have to talk about a lot, because so many people's definition of health is just only trying to lose weight or eating low carb or doing these diet culture fads that are everywhere. Yeah. So really challenging that. And what's so funny is that when a lot of my clients finish group coaching, like we'll talk about what health means to them.
Yeah.
And so usually in the beginning, like, you know, health is like a top value of theirs and something super important to them. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, it may not even be a top value of theirs.
Wow.
How funny is that?
That's wild. That's
so... Yeah. Because they realize how complex it is. Like it's not.
Right.
And all of their other values that get higher help them actually be healthy.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking a little bit about what was the work that you did before you jumped into coaching?
Yeah. So what I did was really interesting. I worked as a food broker for a small food brokerage in Florida. And I sold to a lot of dietitians who wrote menus for the National School Lunch and School Breakfast program. So I was selling really all of the food that kids eat in schools to a lot of Florida.
Wow. And I mean, even that, like I remember back in my dieting days being so judgmental about school luncheon and like how, quote unquote, unhealthy it is because there's regular carbs and bread.
There's so many bad beliefs, wrong beliefs about the school lunch program. And when I worked there, it was almost like when I would talk to people in my social life and I would tell them what I did, they would just like not take my job very seriously or think that it wasn't that great. They're like, oh my gosh, you're just selling to the school lunch program. Well, I have a friend who sells to like Outback Steakhouse. That's way cooler. And it's like, really? Because they have like, maybe you sell like 50 menu items of mashed potatoes and we're over here selling like a millions of servings of mashed potatoes. So is it really that much cooler? Or it would open the door for people to be like, oh, the school lunch program is trash. Like, are you going to help make it better? And it was really, really frustrating and really hard to tell people what I did.
And that was pre intuitive eating for you, or was that
this was pre-intuitive eating for me? And I can't say there's a lot of diet culture, sadly, even in the schools, because you know, when you think about marketing, they are trying to appeal to parents.
Of course,
parents want those terms like natural, antibiotic free, etc. And all of these terms really don't mean that much when you dive into them. You're like, okay, it's really not that big of a deal, but you know, a lot of the school districts would pay extra money to have these terms on the products they got to try and market more to the parents. It's still at the end of the day, most people weren't happy with it. You know, you still would get people complaining all the time saying that, you know, the schools are feeding their kids trash and all of these horrible things. And I think what a lot of people forget about, aside from the fact that the food is actually very nutritious for the kids, is that this program exists for the kids who can't really afford food. Like they might be going home and not getting food for a whole entire weekend. And are we really going to talk poorly about the food they can eat? You know, like at the end of the day, they need calories. It doesn't really matter where it's coming from. I mean, they just need some type of nourishment to eat. Like they're not getting it elsewhere.
And this comes back to the oppression piece of like food accessibility. Like it is a privilege to be able to turn down food. And like the other day I posted a poll about like wanting to go to a fast food place. And I was like, should I go to McDonald's or should I go to Chick-fil-A? And I got an influx of like two messages, either one, people thanking me for normalizing eating fast food, and two, people yelling at me for supporting fast food chain restaurants. And as a reformed, you know, anti-establishment Christian who very much supports the LGBTQ community and realizing that like McDonald's isn't that much better when it comes to where their money is going. And I also know that Chick-fil-A has stopped donating to the very, very harmful organizations that they once were. that there is no ethical consumption under capitalism. Like, we are screwed either way. And yeah. I know that with my own food journey, my own food story, that if I were to deny myself eating McDonald's or eating Chick-fil-A, that would only result in my obsession with thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But the decision would not be autonomous. It would be a decision to people please other people.
Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, our health is so complex, which I know we both talk about all the time. Like, you know, what's some Chick-fil-A?
Literally.
What's some McDonald's? Like, you know, and, it's all food. Who can afford that?
That, like, those foods are created for those who cannot typically afford, you know, much more food. And so it's judgmental. It's judgmental. And it's not a compassionate response to consider the alternative. Bonnie, I could talk to you all day. I just adore you. And I'm so honored that you did my program and would love to have you back in the future and we could talk more. How can people work with you? Can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. So Instagram is where I hang out the most. So you can find me there at Diet Culture Rebel. There are periods between each word. You can also check out my podcast. It's called Diet Culture Rebel Podcast. I have the same name everywhere. I do offer group coaching. So if you're interested in a program with community support, a high level of touch points with myself and other community members, that's an option. It's offered multiple times a year, but your best bet is to just follow me on my social platforms. And then if you're interested, you can learn more about it there. But thank you so much, Bree, for having me on. Like, this was so amazing.
Oh, thanks, Bon. I really appreciate you. And we'll definitely link all of that good stuff in the show notes. So thanks for being here. And thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for being a Diet Culture Rebel.
Wow, thank you.
Hi, friend. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Body Grievers Club. Like all of your other podcasting friends, we would ask that you like, share, subscribe, and give this episode to someone who you think needs to hear it.
We know that grief is tough, but we hope that this podcast helps you feel less alone. To learn more about body grief, check out our Instagram page at The Body Grievers Club.
And to learn how you can work with us today, be sure to check out the link in our show notes for the most up-to-date information. At the time of this recording, it is summer of 2023. We are preparing to launch our brand new program called the Body Image Vault. This program is going to contain jam-packed resources designed to help you expedite your understanding from how to move from body grief into body acceptance. So be sure to get on the wait list to get all of the details.
And remember, friends, no matter how big your body grief is, you're never alone when you're part of the Body Grievers Club.